And hello everyone, this is November the 9th, 2016, episode 32 of the Mini PC Show, Big Talk, Little Machines. My name is Brian Thomas, and here we have Door-to-Door Geeks. Door-to-Door, how are you today?
I'm doing okay. I today went into work into a heavily blue state office building, and I really came close today to making my email signature, making this administration great again. But I don't think that would have flew too well at my administration.
Yeah. I went into work saying, "We won."
Right. Well, you're in a definitely a blue state as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, Massachusetts.
We are now the marijuana state.
Oh, you're the third marijuana state?
Yes. Yeah, I can't believe that passed.
Well, I guess you're in good company. I mean, Seattle won a Super Bowl. The Denver Broncos won a Super Bowl. Denver Broncos also, I'll say, in Colorado, Papa John's are booming. They're doing great business. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. Wait, I do know why. So now maybe you have to look forward to a championship sports team and a booming food enterprise.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Maybe. I have not published last show as we talk here on this evening. I am going to do that as soon as we are done talking, but we definitely have more than a couple things to cover really quick. First off, Eric is not here. Eric is under the weather. Eric did have some news to share with us, but Brian also has some news to share with us. You had yourself a brand spanking new piece of hardware there?
Yes, I do. And I was really thrilled to get it. You know, I was... couldn't wait for the day to come out, and it's the Google Home. I didn't splurge and get any different colors for the speakers, but as you can see, it's the vanilla version, the cream version with a gray base. And I honestly feel that that Alexa just seems more natural. And although she doesn't know everything and she can't do everything, but I feel that she does a heck of a lot more than my Google Home does for the time being. So, I say if you are in the market for a glorified speaker, then this would be the ideal solution for you. But if you want something a little bit more polished and a little bit more natural speaking, then the Amazon Echo is the way to go. Because saying, "Alexa, turn the volume up," just seems more natural than, "Okay, Google, play music." And I apologize for those Google phones out there, but we're going to kick up some music here, hopefully, in a couple of seconds if this hurts me. Ah, that's the running theme. I'm sorry, I don't know how to help with that. So this is where I was really disappointed. I was disappointed. Okay, Google, stop music. I was really disappointed when I went to schedule an event. Now, I could schedule an event on my phone. You know that.
Yep.
Very simple.
No calendaring at all on Google.
Right, nothing. I'm sorry, I can't help you with that. You know, I'm learning. I'm still learning.
Well, the devil's advocate is, I'll say, you're a beta tester.
Yeah.
Everybody who gets a Google product, whether it be any Nexus device, any Nexus phone, any Nexus tablet, or anybody who gets the new Pixel device too quickly, or the Google Home too quickly, you're just a beta tester. The logic is, and the devil's argument is, well, in a month it's going to be better, and then in 3 months it's going to be better, and then in 6 months it's going to be better. I do believe it's going to be up to the par of Alexa in functionality, okay, soon, maybe 6 months or whatever. But to me, the real failing is, okay, and I'll say another good thing. I heard the speaker is of decent quality.
It is.
Right, and that's a plus. You can't fix that with software. But what you can't fix with software is, in like the old Moto X phones, notice I said old Moto X phones, like, oh, now 3 years old, 4 years old Moto X phones, you can customize what you say. You don't have to say, okay,
blank.
Bing. Right. You know what I mean? You can customize it. And that was due to dedicated hardware chips in the device. That's not this device. This device has no dedicated hardware chips. So there's no renaming the device. To me, that's huge failing number one.
Check my bell. Where's my bell?
Yeah. The huge failing number two is, from the get-go, ignoring multi-account support. To not have that in the very beginning, I can almost understand, but you better solve that really quick. I mean, really quick. I don't know anybody, granted, I'm in my 40s now. I don't know anybody living at home with they're the only person with a Google account. I mean, the only solution right now is for everyone to make a group or community or a house Google account. And to me, that's too much like work. And the fact you can't do meetings from day one is to me maybe the most stupid thing.
And
I think I've ever
it
heard.
Is. And the fact that they already do it, why can't they just incorporate that in? Is it that much of a programming challenge? I don't know.
I don't know either, but it's one of those things I have to believe they must be thinking something that they wanted to do down the road that's going to directly come in conflict with that for some reason now.
My thought on that is the Google Assist.
Right. I still am honestly losing faith in that every day. Because once in a while I go try to use it. And I'll say this. I did hear from one of my buddies who's a huge Google guy said, Google's actually going to pay attention. And when you cuss at your Google Home, it's basically going to be like sending an error report or bug report to Google.
Oh my gosh.
Because their logic is if you are cussing at the device, you are obviously pretty upset at the device. Because I can tell you, I open up my Google Assistant about once a month. Mm-hmm. Now, about once every week and a half. I always end up cussing it out in less than a minute worth of use because it is so absolutely useless. It is still nothing more than a algorithmically derived voice activated voice response search engine that doesn't do as well as general search. Mm. I mean, I can literally type into Google that movie with that guy who danced with that girl and it will know what movie I'm talking about. I mean, Google itself works remarkably well with that kind of vagueness, but their Google Assistant still is incredibly incompetent, even with direct questions. I mean, I asked, how do I get to the Google Help Center, which it told me. The answer I was looking for was in the Google Help Center. So I asked it, how do I get to the Google Help Center? It gives me a link to the Facebook Help.
It's almost like they're trying to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, I really do believe in 3 weeks it's going to be better, in 3 months it's going to be better than that, in 6 months. Yeah, I do believe. But for now, to me, it's just nothing more than a beta testing experiment.
I'm hoping it's not like that bad movie that you watched thinking that it's going to get better, and it never does. I'm really hoping that you're right, because
yeah, and it's awfully tiny. Is one thing I'll say.
It's tiny
because you held it up. I literally thought you had a 3D printed replica of one.
Yeah, it's very small and it has a good bass resonance to it. It's very bassy, and I actually got the Google Cast audio as well too for my receiver.
Yeah, and to me that's one of the hooks. This device by itself is not close to as useful as the Amazon Echo was at launch. This expects you to have Google Chromecast audio or Google Chromecast somewhere else in the house. You know, Chromecast is cheap enough, or it was used to be cheap enough, and the audio is still cheap enough to where I can almost forgive that expectation. But I know the Google, the Amazon API infrastructure for their Alexa is wide open. Anybody can basically program anything they want for it right now. It's just a question of for it to be enabled, they have to go look for it and then enable it.
You bring up a good point too, because the unnatural way of speaking to the Amazon Echo is when you want to do something other than get actual facts or listen to music. Like if you wanted to play a game or launch a Bible app, you can't say that naturally. You actually have to start the application and then give your voice command. So you have your pros and cons in both devices, but I find that using the Amazon Echo for listening to music and getting general facts just seems to be that much better. Now, getting route destinations, you would think Google Maps, why wouldn't that be built in? Okay, blah, 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 navigate to such and such. And you know, saying that on my Google Home, thinking that I could push that to my phone, that would be ideal. That's a big failure that you can't do that. Or connect Bluetooth. You know, okay, blah, 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 connect Bluetooth device. Amazon Echo does that flawlessly. Google Home does not do that. So you get your pros and cons. What I do love about the Chromecast audio, I don't want to make this a Google show, but what I do love about the Chromecast audio, it has a Toslink connector. I didn't know that it had a Toslink cable. So you can...
What's that?
So you can actually run fiber from the Chromecast audio to your receiver instead of using the analog connector, like a 3.5 jack you use for your headphones.
Oh, wow.
So in the same port that the 3.5 millimeter jack you put in for your headphones, you can put in a mini Toslink, a fiber optic cable, from that to your receiver. That's brilliant. I thought it was great. You know, it's great audio.
Yeah, to me, that's a very smart thing to do to enable that.
Just a little added feature I thought was really nice to have.
Very cool.
You mentioned one thing that cursing. So I was watching the CNET show in the kitchen one morning. I watched the news for tech news clips. And CNET was doing a review on the Google Home. And I'm not too sure if any of our listeners out there might have caught this, but at the end of his review, he says, okay, blah, 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 you know, F you. And I'm like, oh, my kids are sitting here. I wouldn't expect that to be on the show if I... I thought just that was coming out of nowhere, you know? Very tasteless and unexpected.
Yeah. I'm very shocked they would do something like that. Yeah. I really am. Wow. Yeah, and I mean, I really do have lots of faith in the fact that they're going to end up doing it right. But I'm with the Samsung Galaxy Nexus... was the first time when I got cut and I realized, ow, it hurts. That's when I realized I really don't enjoy being a beta tester for Google. So when I see this new device, because I literally walked when Monday after I told you, I took my kids to the doctors. They had multiple shots, flu shots. Yes, flu shots. Sorry, Eric. Flu shots. When did other things, and they were so good, I said, well, let's stop at Target, because while they were doing that, I looked and I saw their Lego Dimensions Ghostbusters level pack was not $29, but it was only $19. I said, well, only 19 bucks, 10 bucks off. The kids have been really good. You know, they've been really good in school. They've been doing this really good. They've been doing that really good. I really should reward them. So I stopped in Target to buy them that, and we literally walked right by the Google Homes. And I looked at it, and for a split second, that geeky knee-jerk reaction of, oh, that could be, wait a minute, nah, I'm not going to be a beta tester. There are certain things I'm in a rush to get. The chip computer, the Pine 64. These, to me, have a chance to be revolutionary out the box. And they're pushing innovation. To me, a Google Home, you're literally right now nothing more than a beta tester, seeing what is floatable in the Google ecosystem. Because Google's now proven to me over the last couple of years, they internally cannot test anything rationally for normal people because they don't have normal people working at Google.
Not at all.
They don't have family men working at Google. They don't have normal IQ people working at Google. They don't have people with normal relationships working at Google. So they don't understand normal people. So with these kind of things now, they have to put it out there and literally see who complains the loudest about stuff and see if it's, you know, doable.
I should get squawking.
That's just my belief with my experience with them. I've been wrong many times in my life. And if you're not sure about that, I'm sure you can ask my wife and she'll tell you I've been.
Well, that was that time in 1989 that I was wrong, but it turned out I just made a mistake.
Yeah, I remember I bet against Hulk Hogan, but that was different. Okay, one little bit of news that honestly I want to talk about that we did not talk about was, it's going to be the very last link here in a couple of seconds, Brian, as soon as I figure out how to come here, click there, click that. I hate this new if this then that interface. I think it's horrid.
Yeah.
Horrid.
I saw the
Okay. Unfortunately, the link I'm putting in there is just to up-board.org. And we've talked about the upboard a couple times. Intel-based mini PC, genuine mini PC. Now, as soon as you launch the page, one of the first things above the fold is going to be up to bridging the gap. I'm going to encourage people to go ahead and click that. That's where we're actually going to be talking about. This is the Upboard 2. The Upboard 1 is right now for sale on demand, shipping on demand. You buy it, they ship it out like almost immediate. But now, but they also have another Kickstarter going on. This is to the Up 2 or Up Squared, Up 2, bridging the gap. With more Intel processors on it, their low end is a Celeron dual core N3350 up to 2.4 gigahertz processor. This is their low end next one. And their higher end one is a Up Atom quad core E3940 1.0 gigahertz with, now they all have flexible RAM and everything on board. I believe they go as high as 4 gigs of RAM. I'm sorry, 8 gigs of RAM on these boards. Up did the Intel. I'm a fan of the ARM boards. These Intel boards are seriously right now in my mind giving huge competition. Of course, the price has to come down, but right now for just over $100, you can get an Intel Raspberry sized board computer. Intel means almost everything you can do on a desktop or a laptop, you can also do on this mini computer. Now they're coming out with the Up Squared. This thing is kind of crazy. It has USB 3.0 as well. And it has, here's the kicker, I totally forgot. I can't believe I forgot, Brian. The Up Squared also has two gig NICs.
Oh, now you're talking.
So this, I thought I would get you a little fancy there. So now, out the box, this is a very, very reputable and very competent bridge, gateway, firewall, router,
yes,
network, appliance type device. Now this becomes, now me as a company, I can order 20 of these things, put them in this 3D printed case with my sticker on the top and sell it as a appliance type device for businesses of all scales and sizes and scopes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The dual gig NIC just gets me giddy.
No, I fully agree with you. And this is what Intel sought out to do a few years ago when they saw when they felt the crushing hand of ARM processors and, the slowing grind of desktop machines, that we need to do something. You know, we need to do something in this space here. And sure enough, I think they've delivered, you know.
Yeah, and I will say the other stupid thing that I like about this is they do have a SATA 3 built on board as well. I'm a big time SATA
fan. Oh yeah.
They do have USB 3.0 OTG, two USB 3.0 ports. But the other two things I think that was just stupid thing that I really like: reset pin header, power pin header, and reset buttons by default on the board. To me, that makes it much closer to being less tech savvy accessible.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because I'm not trying to numb. Having a reset button right there on the board, it's a little bit easy. Mm-hmm. Instead of having to get there, get your fingers in and pull off and put on every time you want to reboot the computer. I'm really scared to see how popular this is going to be in like a year, because this has the possibility to literally take entire niche markets and make them refocus on how they're doing products.
Now, how strong do you think the community is for something like this compared to Raspberry Pi?
This, I don't know if this could ever even realistically compete with the Raspberry Pi community. This would literally be like Apollo Creed versus Rocky, okay? The two are just in completely separate classes. You know, Raspberry Pi is rough in the alley, scratchy ARM $30 thing, doing all kinds of little projects kind of thing, little projects. But those little projects could be cube satellites. Those little projects could be hot air balloons taking pictures from the upper stratosphere. Those little projects could be submersibles going, you know, a mile deep, but they're little projects. This, to me, is much more of a beefier type product. This is where you could literally take this, add a external hard drive to it, custom OS on it, sell it as a network appliance backup solution, I mean, where you could really handle terabytes of data with no sweat. This to me is much more plausible of a business taking it, putting it in a case and selling it as a solution versus a Raspberry Pi. Even though the Raspberry Pi can do lots of things, this one actually has the opportunity to have power and up to like 8 gigs of RAM. I don't know what you can't do with this kind of device.
Right. No, I fully agree with that. That's perfect space for, like you said, a network attached storage or even a mini server for a small home office.
Yeah. Yeah. And I did just return, the yoga book, which was the $450 2-in-1. Yeah. I don't want to call it laptop, tablet, convertible tablet thing, with over $100 worth of accessories on it. So when I get that money returned to me, which I'm afraid is going to take a month, but this one has right now 51 days to go, this Upboard 2, I might come back and visit this again and see what I can do to maybe get myself one of these puppies. But the bad thing is that they're not shipping until April 2017. I don't think anything ships before that. I was really hoping they would say December or January. Oh, there is one thing I see. February 2017, the Up to Celeron Innovator Package. You'll get an Up to Up Squared board with Apollo Lake Intel Celeron dual core, only 2 gigs of RAM. Yeah, see, I need myself more RAM than that. Yeah, but it is definitely cool. And I believe I'm actually getting one of the first generation Up boards here in the next week. I believe I am. I think I am. I thought I am. I got to double check that. So that could be cool. Intel, I'm telling you, I really don't want to concede anything, but these Intel boards are going to, they're not going to be the demise of Intel, of the ARM boards, but they're definitely going to contest with them. They're going to make them fight for their community, fight for the AI attention. These ARM boards, I think, get a little bit extra love from people. Mm-hmm.
The other thing too is finding, I struggle with this a lot, and this probably makes a good use case to get a 3D printer, but finding cases for these types of boards, I don't know, for some reason I just have a hard time.
Oh yeah. You preach to the choir with that one. I'm seriously right. I'm already like unbelievably close to getting myself a 3D printer just for that reason alone, just so I have the absolute perfect quote-unquote case for all my mini computers, because if I have the printer to make it and I don't have the perfect case, well, that's my own damn fault.
And my kids keep asking, Dad, when are we going to get a 3D printer? I'm like, what are we going to use it for? But this would be that thing that makes the reason why you should get it.
Yeah, yeah. And I have I still have a Pine 64 with 2 gigs of RAM, which is the high-end one. But I also paid them for their battery pack, and their battery pack works really well, works really long. Mm-hmm. It's about the same size as the Pi, but it is the most ugly solution I have so far, because it literally is just a battery spewing out next to a bare-boned board. There has to be something better looking than that. And if I had a 3D printer, well, you know. Just do it myself. And I will say one of the downsides about a 3D printer for me personally is, technically speaking, I have not had a Windows computer on my domain for over 8 years now. Period. I just haven't needed to. I've gotten by just fine with Chromebooks and Linux computers. I have one computer dual booting Windows that I go into once every 2 years, where I go into iTunes and add a show to Podnuts on iTunes. That's it. But if I get a 3D printer, I do believe all of the best, all of the premier, all of the highest rated 3D modeling software to do rapid development and deploy to a 3D printer with any kind of speed is all on Windows.
Shocked about that, being in a maker community.
Well, you got to remember, though. I mean, Android phones are Linux, yet all the rooting, everything is on Windows. Raspberry Pi, like stuff like Pi Bakery, is where you can, through an interface, customize your Raspberry Pi stuff. It isn't even available for Linux.
Showing no love for the Linux community.
which makes no damn sense. You know what I mean? I don't. So Yes, I agree. It should be, but it ain't. I'm not right now. Maybe that will change. Okay, one thing I want to talk about here, Brian. Okay, we all should know how I feel about raspberry pies, about orange pies, about banana pies. I was like, well, I'm a pie lover. But if you go down to line 30, I'm sorry, 298 in our notes, Embed Studio is the name of the link, but it's actually a link to the lemon pie. This is a open sourced. This board is striving to be a little bit more open, quote unquote, open hardware than the Raspberry Pi, which most of these boards, that's their gimmick. This one pitches itself as a open source Linux, Ubuntu, and Android 5.0 platform, 28 nanometer. I guess that's better than 29 nanometer. I don't know. A9 quad core CPU, with a powerful PowerVR 554 GPU for $35. This looks to me, honestly, possibly a touch smaller
It does look,
than a Raspberry
yeah, it
Pi.
does look a little smaller.
It maybe it's just because things are so compact on the board, but it definitely looks a little bit smaller. USB 2.0, one USB 3.0. Now, as soon as we hear that, us educated mini computer peoples, once we hear USB 3.0, we have to then realize it's not going to use micro USB 2.0 for power because it can't. If we keep going around the horn, they just say Ethernet, which I'm going to guess then is 10/100, because if I had gigabit Ethernet, I would call it gigabit Ethernet and not Ethernet. Mini CS1, that's the camera slot. The mic line out audio video, so that combination analog looking port. HDMI looks like full HDMI. A power on and off looks like a button. Looks like an actual button. They have a DDR mini 40 pin 5 connector. I do not even see a power port. Oh, DC 5 in. It says DC 5 volt, but it does look like micro
It
USB.
does, yeah.
Well, then that confuses me because every time I was told you cannot have USB 3.0 with the specification because of the power requirements, you cannot use micro USB. So either I've been lied to or that's not up to IEEE specs USB 3.0.
Unless they're doing something, their own special secret sauce on this board.
Yeah, okay, now it said $20 for the board, okay? Now here's the real wild card question, Brian. Okay, first off, when you go to buy it doesn't take you to go buy it. It takes you to the Indiegogo that shows this made $11,000 total funds raised, only 104% funded, so that's not insane. Sold out, sold out, sold out. So I click the buy button and I can't buy it.
Right. I am doing the same thing.
I'm pretty sure that's more than just mildly annoying.
Is it vaporware? Is that what this says?
I'm gonna guess it's just too soon afterwards. They're not in full launch mode yet. And of course, when I come to the Asian World dot Taboon dot com, it's $88 for this device. I'm not sure it screamed $88 to me. Quad core processor.
Yeah, I'm not too. I fully agree with
One
you.
gig of RAM.
Something that doesn't, it's not in a fully polished product and not just a board for $80, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, 1 gig of RAM is not enough. I mean, it says on the front page, at least, that they're shooting for $20. Okay, that'd be nice, but I guess we'll have to wait and see if it actually hits that.
I'm seeing $35 for a single board, Android, Linux. Ubuntu. This is for this board you're talking about for the lemon pie. I'm seeing a price here for
All right.
$35.
35, you're right. I don't know why I said 20. Well, 1 gig of RAM. I hope these guys nothing but the best.
Yeah.
I hope it does enough that it gives them a chance to innovate and do better in the future. But 1 gig of RAM, $35. USB 3 is nice, but I think it requires a little bit more power than that.
I mean, you can use this as an appliance, but certainly not a front-end device.
Yeah, but, you know, so it has the right name, so they're on to something right. Because, you know, everybody has to have a fruit pie.
Sure do love the name. It is very sweet.
Yeah.
And the pun is intended.
Yeah. So is there anything else on the list that you wanted to talk about? Because there was one other thing. Actually, there was two things that caught my eye. Let me just click a link, make sure first. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, the first one was line 302 in our notes. Orange pie. Orange pie is one of the ones that I think is a much better bang for the buck ratio, at least for the ones we played with, which was the Orange Pie 1. Mm-hmm. That was the one. It was the exact same form factor as a Raspberry Pi, but it was lower RAM. I believe it only had 512 RAM, 10/100 Ethernet, but it was literally $10. Mm. Dare I say disposable.
Absolutely.
They're now doing the Orange PC. I'm sorry, the Orange Pi PC 2. This was the one that I think I got confused. This was the one that's $20. The first thing I'll say, when you look at the board, everything looks a little cockeyed. I don't remember seeing boards with things not perpendicular, all of it being at 90 degrees before, except for, you know, once in a while you have a chip that's like at an angle. But this, there's a whole bunch of chips that are not at that perfect angle. But this is a all-winner A5 quad-core Cortex A5 3 processor. I believe we've seen this at least on more than one other Orange Pi or on a Nano Pi before. 1 gigabyte of DDR3 RAM, 2 USB 2.0, 1 USB OTG, micro SD card slot up to 64 gigs, HDMI out, 3.5 millimeter jack, built-in microphone, gigabit Ethernet, 40-pin Raspberry Pi header, IR receiver, power button, and power and status LEDs for $20. That, to me, is pretty tempting. I love power buttons just because, you know, I love physical buttons. The Raspberry Pi compatible GPIO pins, $20. There's a lot you can do with this, I'm sure.
I'm surprised they put a gigabit Ethernet port on it without any fast access to your data. I think they would have been sufficient with a 10/100, given what's currently on here. It doesn't have SATA. You don't have USB 3.0. What do you think?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of something that would be network intensive, but not disk type intensive. The only thing coming to mind is like fictitious network speed test.
Yeah.
You know, because maybe if it's incoming streaming source, like if it's streaming video from someplace else via Ethernet, maybe that could be best used by it, possibly.
I think with HD video, it doesn't require that much bandwidth. You can get away with 10/100 streaming HD. But with 4K video, streaming 4K, you would definitely need a gigabit. But having whatever that you're going to attach to it wouldn't suffice. You know, not in my eyes. I mean, I could be dead wrong, but
yeah. No, I'm definitely agreeing with you. To me, having gigabit on this thing is nice, but I don't see it. I don't see that being the bottleneck. Even if it, like you said, even if it was 10/100, I don't see that being an incredible bottleneck comparing all the other specs.
They probably could have shaved a good $5 off of it.
Exactly.
It is a nice board, though. I mean, it's definitely an appliance.
Yeah, and the built-in mic. Now, here's the kind of thing. This has a built-in mic. Most Raspberry Pis, most other devices I see don't. So with this having a built-in mic, maybe this is the kind of device you could turn into your personal Amazon Echo with the push button.
Yeah.
You know, doing the developer mode hack around where you don't have to buy an extra device for it. Just a thought.
No, that's definitely a good use case.
And I'm a supporter of the Orange family. I still think they're fine for the money.
Oh, absolutely. I always have that ideal fantasy of a connected home. Not so much where, you know, the oven and the refrigerator is connected, but you can actually give voice commands to get certain things done, add things to your calendar, right, or your list and so forth. That's why I really enjoy the Amazon Echo and the idea of it.
Right.
But not just located in one central location, just having access throughout the whole entire house.
Gotcha. I wanted to talk about here real quick, number 300. We mentioned 3D printers. I'm a firm believer. I'm going to have to get one sooner or later.
This looks like a monster.
Well, this is one that at least two people, I believe, in the Podnuts community that I know of went and bought this one. When I saw this, the first thing I did was I went to my senseis. I went to my gurus up on the top of the mountain. I had to climb to ask them, "Sensei, do you think this is a good 3D printer?" And their response was, "It's not a bad 3D printer. The problem with this 3D printer is it's going to require a little bit more maintenance and a little bit more upkeep," to which I didn't understand what they meant. They said, well, what it means is you're going to probably have to go back and manually level the print table, the print tray, a little bit more often versus a, $300 printer. The head nozzle assembly might require a little bit more maintenance too. Might get clogged a little bit more frequently than a greater one. The plus is though that the actual nozzle they said looked very upgradable. So that's a plus. It looks to me like a bit much to put together. This one is where it literally comes in individual pieces, easily, I guess, 40, 50, 60 pieces kind of thing. And the guy who I watched the video didn't seem crazy talented, said the thing he read said it took all day to put together. He said what I did was I basically, inside of their box, they linked to, I think it was 3 YouTube videos. He said, I watched the first YouTube video. I separated all those parts. I put that together. I watched the second video. And he said, I did have to rewind a lot and, go back and watch. He said, but it literally took him, I want to say, combined like 4 hours to put everything together and get it up and running, which I think is fantastic.
4 hours?
Yeah, which I've heard of easy 8+ hours putting together some older 3D printers.
And these are college graduate individuals that are technically inclined.
Yes, but I'll also say the stupidest people I've ever met in my life are college graduates. And that will piss off college graduates, which just proves my point. I'm not talking about you. Relax. Take it easy. But real quick, we forgot to mention the name of this. This is called the Anet, A-N-E-T, A8 DIY 3D printer. Now, here's the gimmick. If you go back to the top of this, Brian, you see... But there's now a very affordable 3D printer kit based on the Prusa i3 printer, okay? Prusa i3 is like saying an IEEE standard for Cat 5. You know what I mean? When someone creates a 3D printer on the Prusa i3 spec, what that means is it's built with a certain sizes, certain shapes, certain ratios, and it just... And which basically means it's very upgradable. You can every month, if you want, put sink $30 or $50 into it, hypothetically, over the year. And at the end of the year, you'll literally have a completely different 3D printer.
I like the sound of that.
Oh, I do too. Trust me. And that was one of the things that the senseis and gurus taught me very quickly was you look for things based on the Prusa, P-R-U-S-A, i3, spec. So that was that definitely a very good sign. The review I watched for this was not the one linked in this article over at CNX Software. I will say they said it is not the fastest printer, not even remotely close to the fastest printer. It will require a certain amount of because this is physical things, because temperature is involved, this is not a Ronco set it and forget it thing with a 3D printer.
So you actually kind of babysit it and watch it.
Well, not necessarily babysit and watch it, but the first time you print it and then you see artifacts or things happening to the print. Mm-hmm. And then you have to go back and tweak, 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 print a little thing again. see if it made any changes, and then tweak, 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 where it could take up to five like prints before you get it at a stable area. But because this is a lower priced printer, maybe after 3 or 6 or 10 hours of printing, you have to go back and tweak, tweak, tweak again. So more tweaking, more upkeep for the lower priced model. But I will also have to say this. My two friends swear by creating a box, basically a box surrounding the printer on all sides. And then on the front, you have basically a glass door, like your old stereo cabinet magnet holding the door. And the reason is twofold. One, it makes it quiet. It makes it to when the thing can be printing and you don't even know it's printing even though you walk by it, which is a huge selling thing as far as I'm concerned. But two, this is all a temperature-based process. You take the plastic, it comes in through the top print head, basically, and then it heats it up and melts it. The pad at the bottom where it puts everything, where it prints, that also needs to be warmed just a little bit because you can't have it really cold because it's not good for the printing. So putting the box around it also gives it a stable temperature area. You don't have to worry about breezes. You don't have to worry about temperatures dipping people open. Because literally, if you have one just sitting in your ground floor and somebody opens the door going outside 20 plus feet away during a print, he could ruin a print.
Wow.
Okay, because this is all temperature based. So if you have it in the box, which is only like a $30 to $50 investment, you get a much higher accuracy of completion of printing with a good accuracy on it.
Well, if I get one, I know exactly where to put it.
Right.
Yeah, that's this price isn't too bad, Dor.
I trust me, $155 right now on Deer on Gear Best, and it has a $30. No, I'm sorry, I thought it was a $30 coupon. $155, $30, $180, less than $200, and you can have a 3D printer. Now here's the here's the three stats I forgot to mention. Print area is the biggest thing about the printer because that's what you can't upgrade. You know, if something is built upon that Priya i3 spec, you can upgrade a lot of stuff. You really cannot upgrade the size of the print deck without doing a major upgrade, okay? Its print area is 220 millimeters by 220 millimeters by 240 millimeters, which is very competitive to $300 to $400 3D printers. That's the other thing. So this to me is very, very fair, very, very fair price. You really can buy this and this really can grow with you for the next year, 2 year, where you could keep doing things with the same base hardware. I'm the two guys I know that bought one, I'm pretty sure it's two of them. I cannot wait for them to give me their instantaneous feedback on how everything's looking, how everything's going, and then, of course, their long-term feedback in 3 to 6 months, how's everything looking? Yeah, because I will remind them both that you can get a Raspberry Pi setup Octopi, which can be the delivery mechanism for it, telling it what to print, when to print. But Octopi can also allow you to physically hook a camera up and watch the progress of that thing remotely. So you can be in New Jersey and your printer can be in Texas and you can watch it print.
That'd be pretty cool if you were actually buying a case for your mini PC online. And when you paid for it, you can actually watch it being made before it gets delivered.
Right.
That'd be pretty neat. Hey, let me ask you something. So I'm looking through the website and I noticed that it had some quadcopters in the background. I've seen a few designs where you can actually print your own body for a quadcopter. My son has a quadcopter. It's a little toy. And the props, they tend to break off if it bumps into something. They'll pop off and you can put it back on. You end up losing one of them. Now, would I be able to print off another copy of one of those little plastic props? Or how would that work with a 3D printer?
I want to just by default say, well, yes. More than likely, you're going to have to print as many propellers as you need for the entire device, more than likely, just so everything is balanced and everything is kept the same. I don't see a reason why you could not print a blade off. I will say two of my buddies who are into 3D printers are also into flying point of view POV quadcopters. So I can ask them about that as well. I do believe there are parts you can print. I almost draw the line at quote unquote printing the entire thing, but it's plausible. I'll say that.
Okay. I'm just curious because I'm making that case, man. This looks pretty nice, like the price and what you talked about it so far. It's not a bad buy.
Yeah, $180. I mean, that's the whole thing. Now, if we put it in perspective, Brian, you take back the Google Home.
I know.
You take back the Google Home, and then you just put another $60 on top of that, and voila. Now, I don't want... Here's the whole thing. I really don't want you to take back the Google Home. I really don't, because you're the only one I know who is going to own both of them, and I would love to know, around Christmas time, if it's actually competing with... the Echo. I expect it to, but I don't expect it to be better than the Echo, but I don't know.
I don't know either, man. I'm crossing my fingers and kind of hoping, like fingers and toes, and I'm hoping that they'll make some changes. And they have to make some changes, because if they don't, it's not going to be a well-polished product. It won't. It won't compete.
I agree. Absolutely agree. Okay, tell me next really quick was an article over at opensource.com, line 300, Brian. When I was at the OLF, this page would have answered a lot of the questions people were asking me about mini computers. And this is the top 10 Raspberry Pi add-on boards. Because 99.99999% of the things people wanted to do with the Pi would have required some sort of extra sensor or just some extra piece of hardware. And if you go through these add-on boards, the first one, of course, is the camera module. After that, you have the Sense Hat. The Sense Hat is, to me, one of the coolest boards to just display, show off diverse functionality, because it has a little joystick on it. It has the multicolored LEDs, it has a hydrometer, accelerometer, and I believe magnetometer all built right onto it. They have the Unicorn Hat, which I just think is a great name, but it's an 8x8 LED matrix, and they're more spread out than the Pi Hat. They're bigger, and it just looks better. I do think that's really cool. The other one here is called the Moto Zero, which this is the one I really like the idea of it, and this is the one I could see being successful for what it is. This is a Raspberry Pi Zero hat board. So it's basically the same exact form factor, length, and width as a Raspberry Pi Zero, but of course it's like five times taller because what it has on it, it has a whole bunch of actuators, I believe is what they're called. Controllers. Yeah. It's a controller board.
It's like you can control up to four motors.
Yeah. It has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 connectors, positive and negative. So four completely different things. This to me is the kind of thing you could do if you were looking to literally make your own quadcopter or make your own tank or make your own vehicle kind of thing. I thought that was definitely very cool. But yeah, there's more than a couple of boards there if you just keep scrolling down. One of the boards had a built-in breadboard. I just thought that was awesome. A built-in breadboard hat. I mean, I don't know how you can ask for more than that.
Those polished products look a little better. What is this? Oh, I'm looking at the Adafruit Captive Touch Hat. Now that is pretty nifty.
Yeah, you can turn anything, I believe, organic into a touch button or a quote-unquote musical instrument kind of thing.
Could you imagine showing that to like a one-year-old?
I'm sure they would be as amazed as the 88-year-old yeah. initially, but I'm sure they would also have a hell of a lot more fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the Skywriter hat. We saw Google display a technology about a year ago, I want to say at Google I.O., yeah. where it was hand gestures above objects where you could twist your fingers and do all kinds of things. The Skywriter hat is promising some of that hand gesture control on a Pi form factor, I'll say. I'm going to say it's not... If you remember, the thing from Google was super tiny.
Yes.
Like, seriously, you could put it in the fabric. This is not that. I also doubt it's as accurate as the Google thing was, but it's something, I'll say. So it could be cool. Yeah, I just thought it was good stuff. And that was over at opensource.com. I got to say, that's one of those sites. It's a Red Hat sponsored site, but I really do think they have some really good articles there a lot of times.
Wow, this I'm really, the Moto Zero really caught my eye. For £10, that's not a bad deal. Not a bad deal at all.
I agree. Cool. Yeah, okay. I'm going to mention one more because I'm a banana pie kind of guy. On our notes, Brian, it was line 302. We have not heard a lot of banana pie news, to be honest, I think, thankfully, for a while. This is a banana pie Webduino. Webduino. Smart IoT module development board. Really, like we were talking about for the last couple weeks, really small. This thing is not even remotely big. I'm looking for inches.
Wow.
It is 3 centimeters long by 2.5 centimeters wide with 1.3 centimeters thickness.
That is smaller than a AA battery.
Yeah, this thing is definitely teeny tiny. It has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It has about 10 GPIO pins on it. It's $35, which I'm going to guess is slightly expensive for what it is. At least slightly expensive for what it is. But it is also brand new. So, yeah, I don't expect it to be really cheap as of yet, but it does have a RGB LED, a photo cell, a micro switch button, micro USB connector. So I'm going to also guess and say this thing's going to have onboard storage, but I'm going to guess not much onboard storage because I don't see any room for a micro SD card.
I like the board design. You can actually slide pins or slide your pin into this little female socket here. Without the need of soldering anything. I like that design. And most of them you'll have, like with the 40-pin Raspberry Pi board, it's just the pin sticking up, and you know, you would slide your cable over that. But this is the opposite. I think that's pretty neat.
Yeah, so I'm going to say this is like a Arduino programmable interface where there really isn't any storage, quote-unquote. Mm-hmm. You just program against it is what I want to say. Interesting. And I'm a banana pie guy, and anytime I see the banana people doing anything, I always like supporting them.
Well, I would say for the folks out there in the podcast world, if you are building an Internet of Things device and you have these devices in your home, definitely carve out a piece of your network, put it on a separate VLAN that does not have your normal day-to-day traffic running on it, and put it behind some kind of firewall. It's just because devices like these do not have security in mind.
Yeah, and that's why I like the Ubiquiti Edge Router X. I keep thinking it's a very good thing to have. Layer 2 switching. You can easily VLAN off all of your networks on it. I also would like to have the time to play with mine, but I haven't had time yet.
Yeah, Ubiquiti, they make really, really good devices.
And I'm more believing as time goes on, isolating your network into smaller subnets is really becoming absolutely necessary.
It's not foolproof, but it just makes it a lot better.
Yeah.
There's some great links, Dora. Thank you. Yeah. I love stuff like this.
Yeah, I can't stop. Yeah. Okay, we've been at this for about an hour. Is there anything you wanted to end off with?
No, I do want to I hope that Eric feels better. I feel bad that he's not here to join us today.
Yeah, I mean, he sounded like he was more sleepy than anything else. Knowing him, I'm going to guess he was up at 3 o'clock in the morning listening to election results. And the reason he's not here is because he's tired.
I hope that's the case. Yeah, it was really crazy with that election.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think that's it. I want to, you know, thank everyone for tuning in and checking out the show. And I really appreciate everyone's support.
Yep. And I'll say if you want to support us, well, A, if you're not supporting us, mini PC show at Panos.com, what do we have to do to get you to support us? If there is a Patreon thing you can think of, please let me know. I need an excuse and a reason, a driving force to make that happen. But for now, if you do go to Panos.com/Amazon, I will get, like, most of the time on average, a 1% or less kickback. So if you go buy $100 piece of equipment, I might get $1 out of it. Every little bit helps the network stay up and running. Especially this time of year with Christmas sales, it is definitely the time when I really do hope people will support us. And again, if you want to send us emails, just send them to minipcshow@panos.com. Brian, where can people catch up with you at?
You can find me at the Google Plus. I'm on Google Plus site there, so you can reach me at Ask the Cable Guy.
Very cool, very cool. And with that, we will talk to everyone next week.